Well, anyway, Prabhupada has this. Prabhupada has in his purport this much ignored sentence: "There's no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this." But the fact is that as soon as he says there's no sense in tracing out the history, again, when this came up in I think 74 or 75, and he wrote a letter, attached a document to Madhudisa to explain this whole thing. And he used Tala Kapikidnaya, the example of the crow and the tall fruit, about arguing over and over a long time about something that cannot be settled. A tall is like Talavan, a kind of a palm, it's a palmyra palm. So these two sages were sitting there and they noticed a crow alight on the branch of the palm tree, and simultaneously a fruit fell down and the crow flew away. So there was a huge dispute of whether the crow's alighting on the branch and flying up again caused the fruit to fall, or whether the fruit falling caused the crow to leave, you know, and went on forever. It's an example of a question that's cannot be settled by argument. And said we shouldn't waste time on this. But volumes of ink and forests of paper have been slaughtered for this on this question. He said not to worry. But one thing is, I thought I would show you. I found this, I was just reading this new translation, I guess it's a new translation, of Jiva Dharma. And in this is Sarvabhavana's translation, in the very first chapter, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaking just what Prabhupada says. Servitorship to Sri Krishna is the Nitya Dharma, the eternal Dharma, of the Jiva, and when the Jiva, somehow or other, turns away from Krishna, this change of attitude is tantamount to, means equivalent to, rejection of the Lord and His service. From the point of this occurrence, the jiva is subject to the dominion of Maya because of his neglectful ignorance and consequent forgetfulness of the Supreme Lord. Furthermore, upon entering the material world, this is interesting. Upon entering the material world, the jiva brings with him no historical record of this fall, as this fall originates outside the purview of material time, thus justifying the use of the phrase anadi bahirmukha. Beginninglessly, in terms of material time, turned away from the spiritual realm. That's exactly Prabhupada's account. It's like when you come, it's like you were always here. You just can't trace it out. And Prabhupada always says Nitya Dharma means you cannot trace out the beginning. He doesn't say there was no beginning. He says all the time you cannot trace it out.
Yeah. So the thing is if the Lord did not want the creation of the material world, and he's creating it in reaction to Jiva's desires, sinful desires, then when you're here and when you're stuck here, and it seems so interminably difficult to overcome it.
It says that. It says it's durakya, yeah.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. In other words, it seems like such a cleverly made prison house, if you want to use that word. He's made it really hard for us to get out. It seems.
Not really. Not really. You have to understand that. What's happening is a satisfaction of our desires. And so you have to come down to our desires and our freedom. As soon as we turn toward Krishna, and I think that turning toward Krishna we may not even realize what it is, but then immediately things start to happen when we get out. Yeah. But you can see how it's because of the freedom of the jivas that Krishna doesn't interfere with it. Why, when he comes to the material world, he has to act sometimes in such, well, somewhere it said that the Lord in the world, he moves forward like a snake. No, it's not like this, it's like this, or this and this. Well, like, for example, you know, why in order to restore Dharma there had to be a battle of Kurukshetra? Wasn't there some other way to do it? But all the while, he's acting in such a way as to not compromise the freedom of the jivas. And so that's how he has to work. Anyway, let's go on to the next text. The illusion living entity. Yeah, the one we're talking about in the previous verse appears in so many forms. Bahurupa, offered by the external energy of the Lord. While enjoying in the modes of material nature, Ramamano Guneshu Asya, he misconceives, thinking in terms of I and mine. This is Mamaham Iti Manyate. We had this phrase, Mamaham, in the last chapter. Mamaham, my and I. Well, this is the phrase here. What happens? This is what illusion is. This is thinking of in terms of I and mine. So Prabhupada first talks about the Bahurupa, the Bahurupani. There are many forms, and here he gives these numbers of 1,100,000 worms and reptiles and so on. These come from the Padma Purana. Sometimes Prabhupada calls species. Here he says so many forms, but he's usually species. I looked up to finally found a quote in Sanskrit. It's jati. There's so many jatis. Jati is the word in India used for, usually translated as subcaste, and endogamous occupational group. It's a group that does a particular occupation, cleans streets, does office work, some particular occupation, and they only marry within their group. That's a jati. So that's the word that's used here. It's not, it may not be species as, you know, conceived in modern systems of classification, but this is the numbers. Anyway, there's a lot of them. And so, and then, so that's one example of changing different species as one transmigrates in the other, is from childhood to boyhood, boyhood to youth to old age, another body. The living entity creates his own body by his personal desires. And the external energy of the Lord supplies him the exact form, by which he can enjoy his desires to the fullest extent. When you look at the insects and animals, you have to think, there's somebody in there and they're having fun. This is what they wanted. Yeah.
The species means Brahmanas is one species. Doesn't matter which color of skin you are, or doesn't matter which nationality you are, and Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. This is four types of civilized human beings. So is it really So it's a correct understanding?
I'm not sure.
Well, it's jatis.
They're jatis, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of Brahmins. But there's
more jatis, at least in India. You know, there's jatis within the kshatriyas, within the brahmanas, within the vaishyas.
So it's not.
So but I don't know how they use the word. This jati is a modern Hindi usage, I don't know.
But jati also in logical Sanskrit means like the equivalent of a Aristotelian form. Gotva is a jati.
Mm-hmm. So cowboys, yeah.
So
just means a class.
Not, for example, not all Chinese is one jati, and all
I'm not sure. I don't. It says there are 400,000 species of human jatis of humans.
How did you make the connection between that verse in the Bhagavad Gita and jati?
What verse in the Bhagavad Gita?
This one. That was in Avalokiteshvara. This verse. Prabhupada's translated here. 8,400,000 species analyzed in the Bhagavad Gita. And you said, Prabhupada says species, but then you said you did some research or something.
Well, this verse that I've got right here, these numbers come from the Padma Purana.
Yeah.
And somewhere I saw the Sanskrit, because I was curious about what was the word that he translates as species, and this is jati. But I don't understand your question. How do I recognize?
Because the verse, I don't see jati in the verse from the Padma Purana.
From the Padma Purana?
Jalaja Navalakshmi, Stavra is Navalakshmi, 9 lakhs, swimming in the water, Stavra Lakshmi.
I'm not sure where I saw it.
Navalakshmi, Stavra Lakshmi, Shadi, Primero, Rudra Sankhya, 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 Ka, Akshinam, Nasham Akshinam, Himshal Lakshana, Himshal. That's Vishnu Purana.
That's the Vishnu Purana?
Yeah, there may be different verses.
Somewhere, where is that from, the verse book?
No, that was in Chaitanya Charitamrita Bhakti Lila
1913. Okay, let's look at the verse book. We had to track this down, huh, right? I'll turn this off. Yeah, maybe I'm wrong. No, I saw it.
I'm working on there's only 2 minutes.
I've heard this question asked 10 times to 10 different people, and everybody comes up with a different answer. Exactly what is it? How like how what does it mean for 400,000 human forms? How many human forms are on this planet? And everybody comes up with a different answer.
Yeah.
What?
It's just that somewhere I saw jati, I looked it up and I saw, I thought it may have been in the verse book or something. One of these verse books that we have.
I heard so many different versions.
But it's true that these quotations appear in different Puranas, you know, they're repeated.
Yeah, there's 400,000, huh?
This is Padma Purana here.
Is it the same?
But I don't see jati in here either.
That one?
I don't know where I found it. Jalaja Navalakshani.
That's
the one. Stavara Lakshadimshati. Same verse. Grim my old Rudra Sankhya. Pakshima Dasha Lakshana. Pumsi Lakshani Pashana.
It doesn't say both.
But see, doesn't the word. This is the list of numbers. I think that there's more to this quotation, and it's not all here.
Something before or after.
Yeah, something before or after.
Have I got the Padma Purana?
This says Padma Purana. In the first book. Well, somewhere when this was quoted, it had the word jati. But anyway, that's not really the issue.
Oh, this is where you got it from.
Where did I get it from?
Prabhupada, or possibly. Anyway, Prabhupada giving a Bhagavad Gita lecture on Bhagavad Gita 143, he
says, simply just imagining, taking some whims from the Padma Purana, Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Ashi-inch-chant-varam-schaiva, jiva-jati-shu, lakshan-sthan-jiva-jati-shu. Okay, skip that, okay. So, Ashi-inch-chant-varam-schaiva, lakshan-sthan-jiva-jati-shu. There are 8,400,000 types of jiva-jatis.
Yeah.
He doesn't say where they go.
Yeah, that's
Brahma Vaivarta. So he cites Padma Purana, but then he
says it switches to Brahma Vaivarta.
So this must be a parallel passage from that Brahma.
Mm-hmm. What was the mention?
143.
You interested in this topic?
No, I just, because, I'd heard, when you said Jati, I put this one in the verse, so I wondered where it was connected. So
okay. I'm interested in actually finding out how many.
143 on July 3rd, 1973.
I've had this discussion. How many of the 400,000 species of life are actually, 400,000 species of human life are actually on this planet?
And where do the Davis fit in?
Oh yeah, where do the Davis fit in?
How did you know?
Where do the Yakshas fit in?
Huh?
Where do the Rakshasha fit in? Where does the Yakshas
fit in? Good question.
What?
The question's been your place in your whole of life, figuring out. The first thing is to know what it takes to go back to Godhead, then you worry about the other things later.
I feel like we'd be better off discussing the fall of the jiva in this one.
Yeah, right. Anyway, he's just giving this Bahu Rupas, so you can enjoy. The tiger wants to enjoy the blood of another animal. A Prabhupada called Nidanalala that wants to be a meat eater. He would have to take birth as a tiger. And the same way, for desire to get a. So anyway, that's pretty straightforward. That's how it happens. Then he goes on. Again, he uses the dreaming example. You concoct various things and golden mountain. So here he mentions this misconception of mind and I. Then he says the karmi thinks of this world as mine, and the jnani thinks I am everything. So the whole material conception of politics, sociology, philanthropy, altruism, etc., conceived by the conditioned soul, is on the basis of this misconceived I and mine, which are products of a strong desire to enjoy material life, identification with the body, and with the place where the body is obtained. Under different conditions of socialism, nationalism, family affection, and so on, are all due to forgetfulness of the real nature of the living entity. The whole misconception of the bewildered living entity can be removed by the association of Shukadeva Swami. So there's other places, of course, the I in Mamaham is explained a little differently. That is, I means I am the body. And then what is in relationship to the body is mind. But here, as he will amplify in the next, he divides it into the phase of mind. This body is mind. These people are mind. This family is mind. And the I conception refers to, even if one is free of the of being a karmi, one becomes a jnani, and then he says, I am everything. Mm-hmm. Hunger and opasana. You worship yourself as God, huh? Hunger and opasana. I am everything. So these are the two misconceptions like this. Prabhupada refers to the the bodily identification as under narrow and extended selfishness. Narrow selfishness, as I just identify myself with, you know, my own body. But then there's extended selfishness, my family, my jati, my community, my gang, my social class, my country. These are all considered selfishness by Prabhupada. The Western false ego is pretty much narrowly centered on this, on the individual, whereas still we see in India the false ego is the family. People identify much more strongly with their families than they do in the West.
Do they have more karmic concept than...
More what?
A bit more into karmic identification and Westerners are into the yogi.
I'm sorry, can I understand?
Because the purport says that karma thinks of this world as mine, and the jnani thinks I am everything. So, and you were mentioning that in India people.
Well, because in the West the family is broken down. Remember, we used to have the same family system, but they call a joint family in India, called extended family, and then it became what they call the nuclear family, right, which is the mother, father, and children, and now it's subnuclear. So just as a falling apart of sustained human relationships in the West, so naturally you get down to the more and more narrow forms of selfishness.
But it's not like Gyanis.
No, it's not like Gyanis. The Prabhupada goes on, and now he discusses this even more here in the next verse. Now, having described the material condition, as soon as the living entity becomes situated in his constitutional glory, mahimni svay, in his own glory, glorified by, and begins to enjoy the transcendence beyond time and the material energy, kala maya, he takes this to be time and maya. Ramaiti, he enjoys this. Katta samohan, because this bewilderment or misconception is gone. He gives up ubaya, he gives up both of them. Ubayam. Ubiyam means both. He gives up both of them, the I and mine, and Udaste, and is becomes fully manifest as the pure self. So here Prabhupada, now he says, they gives this exegesis on I and mine. Two classes of men. The mind is very prominent in the higher state. The misconception of I is prominent. I mean, it's there all the time. In a sense, we should understand that in the misconception, I am the center of enjoyment. I am the center of, I am the enjoyer. And the center of the universe. Even if I believe in God, his function is to serve me. In other words, the materially pious person is the enjoyer, but he thanks God for supplying his enjoyment. But I'm still the enjoyer. God is simply the one. I'm careful to obey the rules so I get what, that he's happy, so he gives me what I want. Huh?
Or that's not
nice. Yeah, that's right. But I'm still the center. I'm the center of enjoyment. When the misconception of, well, let's go on. In the animal state, mind is perceivable, even in the category of cats and dogs, who fight with one another with the same conception of mind. It is my bone. No, it is my bone. They fight over property and things like that. And the same misconception is prominent in the shape of, it is my body, it is my house, it is my family, it is my caste, it is my nation, it is my country. And the higher stages of speculative knowledge, the same is now transformed into, I am, aham brahmasmi, I am, or it is all I am, and so on. They're, you know, mantras like that. Soham. Soham asmi. Soham. That I am.
Is that I am that? Soham asmi.
Huh?
What is the translation?
Soham?
Yes. That I am.
That I am.
That, well, soham just means that I am.
That I, yeah.
Soham asmi is that I am.
Soham asmi.
I am God.
I am one with God, or I am God. It's usually that Mayavadis take it that way. It shows up in the Isha Upanishad. But it's a different meaning. I am like the sun.
Yourself
is our Purusha.
Yes,
it is
Soham Asmi.
Huh?
They are saying Soham Asmi.
But the Lord means in that case, what, the way we understand it is that I am like the Lord in quality. He is radiant like the sun, as am I.
Dasoham Asmi.
Dasoham, yeah, well that's the next sentence. Dasoham, yeah, Dasoham, that's correct. But in the real significance of I can be realized only when one is situated in the consciousness of I am the eternal servitor of the Lord. So it is not that in the pure state there is no I. That's why the word, you know, in Sanskrit, you have this word. That we always call false ego is aham, right? Which is I. Ahamkara. Which always translates as false ego. But it literally means aham is I, and kara means maker. So it means that which gives or produces the sense of I. Gives the sense of I, or individuality. Now, Prabhupada calls this false ego because this ahamkara is a material element for the conditioned souls. This false ego appears in the Mahatattva and then, you know, is divided into three parts. So it's a materialistic ego. And it's all based on turning away from Krishna, so therefore it's not what I am, really. And so when this ahankara is gone, it's not that I am not a person anymore. Now I discover who I really am. So there's still an I. But it means I am the servant of Krishna. That's all. So that's why he calls it, you don't see any other word false. Just means really ego. But Prabhupada wants to point out that we have a real ego. Because the Mayavadis say, when the ahankara is gone, there is no me anymore. I have no identity.
And you're lying.
Huh?
Then you're lying.
Oh, you're an Orion, right? But that's only way of talking. Ultimately, there's no God, there's no worshiper, there's no act of worship.
Oh, God, like
You got to be really fried to be attracted to that. That's why Prabhupada calls it a form of suicide. You got to be so miserable that this is a great idea. You want to get rid of yourself. You hate yourself so much. And rightfully so. So then Prabhupada said, this misconception of I am the Lord or I am the Supreme is more dangerous than the misconception of mine. And so here he says, there are identity statements. In the Vedas, in the Upanishads, they're called Abheda Vakya, the statements of identity. And there are also in the Upanishads statements of the supremacy of the Lord. So it becomes the job of the sage to reconcile these two statements. Someone says that the Lord is great and I am the servant, and the others to say that I and the Lord are one. And the both statements are there. So he says this. And of course, there's different ways of doing it. The way of the Mayavadi is to say that the statements of identity are the real true statements, and whenever they speak of the Lord, they're just conventional. There's words in Sanskrit for this, paramarthika and vyavaharika, conventional speech and paramarthika, real, the true sense of the term. And Shankaracharya does this neat thing, but he trickily sets up two layers of meaning and this fits everything into one or the other, so his philosophy is there by just discounting the conventional idea. And he says Brahman can be viewed in two ways. One is an object of avidya and one is an object of vidya. When Brahman is an object of avidya, there are the categories of God, the worshipper, and the act of worship. But when Brahman becomes an object of knowledge, then these three categories disappear. That's what he says. The other way to understand this, and which makes more sense of the Upanishads, you don't discount half of it, is to say they're both true. And there's both oneness and difference simultaneously. Qualitatively one, you are Brahman, but there is, as the Bhagavad Gita says, there's Param Brahman. In the Bhagavad Gita is very clear, and it's nice to know, I can point out to you, that the Bhagavad Gita as being translated into English is becoming more clear. Because the Bhagavad Gita used to be, in all its translations, it was a totally Mayavad document. Because the most popular translation for many years used in the schools was by this Ramakrishna Mission Swami from Hollywood. What was his name?
Prabhavananda.
Assisted by Christopher Isherwood, a British writer, notorious homosexual, but was interested in Vedanta and helped him. So that became the main major Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. And then there was the other one was Radhakrishna, Dr. Radhakrishnan's. That Prabhupada used his translations, actually before he had his own Gita, he used his translation because he said the translations are all right. But in the purport, he would just directly contradict. You can understand a lot of Prabhupada's early Bhagavad Gita lecture because he's preaching against the purports. Especially when Krishna says, you know, man mana bhava bhakta, or when Dr. Radhakrishna says, is not to Krishna the person who one should surrender, but to that which is unborn within Krishna.
Inside Krishna.
Inside Krishna. Yes. And then Prabhupada said, they don't know there's no difference between Krishna inside and out. They're thinking him as a conditioned soul. So So, but now it's become much more theistic, mostly, you know, since the 60s. And, for example, the translation of Barbara Stoller Miller, she definitely has a footnote to point out that the last verse of, what is the 14th chapter, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, means exactly what it says, that I am the basis or foundation and support of Brahman, that Krishna is prior to or above Brahman.
Thank God.
Yeah, so it's happening. That's, you know, I think that has something to do with the influence of Srila Prabhupada.
Did you ask people what happened to them?
Huh?
They declared that they are not Hindu at all.
Who?
Ramakrishna Mission. They declared totally.
Yeah.
That we are not at all Hindu. We are not Sanatana. We have no dharma. We are just Hindu. It was a big disturbance.
Since when? When they started in India?
10 to 15 years before.
Oh, really?
It was very good disturbance in India.
Mm-hmm.
Then they have more than 4 or 5 lakhs initiative devoted.
Mm-hmm.
And they are all hunger strike. Then by court they became Hindu again.
Hindu, huh?
Yeah.
Sarva upadi vinirmuktam, huh? No? Anyway, so undoubtedly there's oneness of the living entity with the Lord in many respects, but ultimately the living entity is subordinate to the Lord and he is constitutively meant for satisfying the senses of the Lord. The idea in transcendence is there is still sense gratification. It's not that sense gratification goes away, but that the center of the sense gratification is Krishna. And in relationship with Krishna, as parts and parcels, part and parcel of Krishna, whenever Krishna is satisfied, we are satisfied. That's what happened. But definitely get a sense gratification. So then Prabhupada has a discussion against this idea that I am God. If the living entity been equal in all respects, why was he put under the influence of Maya? He's under the control of material nature. I know what they say, as they used to say in the 60s, it's my lila. I said, that's your lila, to be walking around Philadelphia in a dirty pair of blue jeans with pimples all over your face? Can't you do better than that? We used to have these conversations with these gods. That's your lila.
What they were implying? What was their reply?
Who are you to judge? Anyway, it was a useless talk. But because they cannot. They have to grow old. They have to die. They become diseased, you know. Is this lila? Is that what you're doing for fun?
Then they not have a real life because real life is supposed to be completely decomposed, whether they scold it or pray.
No, people don't know what it. You don't even see real Maya bodies. Can a living entity who claims to be as good as the Supreme Lord control material nature? I knew guys used to take LSD, stand up on the hillside, and claim they were doing it. They were making the planets move and but unfortunately I had to take a pill to do it, but it showed like some kind of dependence. The foolish eye would reply that he would do so in the future. But if you could do it in the future, well, why can't you do it now? Huh? Why are you now in the control of material nature? So these things are all here, these arguments. In his conditional state, the living entity is the servant of illusory Maya. See, you're the servant anyway. At that point, we've asked the people. We say to people, surrender to Krishna, but it's not like they don't, like they really have a choice. You just choose how you want to surrender, the nasty way or the nice way. Because Prabhupada states this, that the materialists meet Krishna in the form of death. And that's when they surrender to him. They have to acknowledge his power. By a devotee surrendering to Krishna is the nice way. And we give up also everything, all the illusory idea that we had any possessions, that something belonged to me. That sometimes feels like death. There's the death of the false ego, squealing in protest sometimes. This is a nice statement. It's like one is face to face with the Supreme Lord. It's like being facing the sun. Huh? He's free from all illusions. And one who is not so is in the darkness of illusory Maya. You turn away from Krishna, you stand in your own shadow. Any other questions about this?
That experience that you were talking about, having to feel badly.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Is that what they call the dark night of the soul?
I guess it's used loosely that way. It wasn't such a dark night. The dark night of the soul comes from the mystical writings of Saint John of the Cross. And for him, it's a phase in mystic advancement when you are you have become, and it's not something that a devotee will go through, but in his theology, there's a phase where you become detached from or removed from material reality. You've given up your attachments to the material world. But still you have no footing in the spiritual world. Matter is not, you don't value matter, material relationships, but still you haven't had an experience of the divine yet. You know it's there, but it hasn't happened yet. And he calls this the dark night of the soul. And then in that dark night, he says, then Jesus comes. That's his experience. It will be a little different for us. Because we connect right away with transcendence. So that is as a little, now it's used all kinds of ways in a loose way by people. That's actually where it comes from. Yeah.
In the purport there is one sentence. It says that in his conditional life the living entity is servant of the illusory Maya, and in his liberated state he is the pure, unqualified servant of the Lord. This is just a mistake. Pure, unqualified servant of the Lord.
What's wrong with that? You don't like the pure part or the unqualified?
No, unqualified.
Unqualified.
Doesn't mean
that. You know, he said without any qualifications. You know, sometimes you say, unqualified. When you put conditions on something, sometimes it's a qualified agreement, but this. It's just a way. You can read it a different way. Unconditional servant of the Lord. No conditions.
Not like other words.
Unqualified.
Yeah.
Means, yeah.
Not like in other words. I serve Krishna from 9 to 5.
Yeah, right. Yeah. This is where the word is used. Yeah?
I was just going to say, I just looked this up now, relating this back to the question that it's answering. Adjusted briefly, and I don't remember exactly what you said, because the question was, is it yadrichchika, or
yeah,
is it hetuna,
uh-huh,
is it vaisam hetu? course is, and he says that this answer is saying that it's yadrishtika. In other words, that the jiva's coming in contact with the material body is not caused by any external factor. He's bringing it in, and particularly in this verse, where kind of the element of bhakti comes in. He takes it as these two independent things. You either independently choose to go into maya, or you without any external cause, or without any external cause, you take the bhakti.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it. I can see Prabhupada seems to say the cause is that you turned away from Krishna, but if you go down to that, you see the interesting thing about free will is its resemblance to the idea of chance. Especially in modern physics, they have this notion of absolute chance, which is the notion of a causeless event. And it's a very hard thing to conceive of. Because usually when we say chance, you know, I take a coin, but I flip it like this, heads or tails, right? 50% heads, 50% tails on the average. But it's actually, if I knew all the causes, if I knew how high my thumb is from the floor, if I knew the angle of my thumb, if I knew the exact force of my thumb, if I knew the resilience of the floor, I could predict, knowing all the initial conditions, where this head or tail sitting on my thumb, how it would fall. So a lot of times when we say chance, it just means there are causes we don't know about. But it's not literally causeless. But in modern physics, in quantum mechanics, so far, things happen for no cause. Little bits of things happen. Now, some scientists don't like this and say there must be some hidden variable somewhere. Others say you just have to accept it. But really, our experience of something that's like that, where you just have a sheer addition to the determinateness of reality, it's not there in the anesthetic condition, in the antecedent conditions, is what we call free will. So when we say free will, yadrishtika, that is to say something that happens of its own accord. So if you refer to the free will of the living entity, this falling has a cause, that is covering the maya, that has a cause, the decision of the Lord subsequent to his turning away from the Lord, and that turning away, he does it up on his own. He wasn't forced to. He just did it. He had the opportunity, and he had his freedom. Yeah? So it's a perfectly plausible way to look at it. In that case, you could say the answer is, well, it's both.
But then how we deal with this? I mean, it's, you know, there's this question. And Krishna says, one who comes back,
the way I believe that Prabhupada says this is that you don't make the same mistake twice. Basically, you've learned your lesson. When you go up to the higher planets, you got to come down. Your good karma runs out, and down you go. But when you go to Krishna Loka, you don't have to come back down again. And so you've learned your lesson. He Prabhupada says the potential is still there. Your freedom has not gone away. But somehow or other, and I think he said maybe once in a while somebody does it twice. Some idiot. But overwhelmingly, you don't. Because the freedom is always there, because Prabhupada says you never lose your freedom.
So that posits that when we go to the spiritual world, there'll be some remembrance of our...
Something. Well, sometimes, you know, you don't have to have an active remembrance. I mean, there's many things that we've had an experience that conditions, you know, or controls the way you behave, and we don't remember it. but it still has its effect. So somehow or other, it's had its effect on us. Or you may say, yeah, I don't know you that. I don't know what you know or don't know. You know Krishna and love of Krishna, you know.
Yeah, but it seems, then it would also seem to me if you remember your fall into the spiritual realm, that would cause some sadness, even if you're in the material world. I mean, if you remember your fall into the material world, and you go back to the spiritual world, it would cause some sense of sadness when you're in the spiritual world.
I don't know. I don't think there's any sadness there. You're just so happy to be back. Like Jaya and Vijaya, you know, okay, if we did our thing, now we're really glad to be back. You must appreciate it better. Okay? Thank you very much. You know, Prabhupada.